I'm curious too, with the war in the background, did things change after Pearl Harbor in terms of people's attitudes and
Yeah,
awareness of the
we.
war?
I, one of the things I always remember so well, it's, we would have assemblies, every little while, probably every week or so, and I can still see Mr. McDonald standing up, and the microphones, of course, of those days were not very sensitive, but he'd be right up, and he used to read off the names of the, excuse me, of the graduates who had been killed. And it was quite an emotional time at that point, or ones that had been taken prisoner or something like that. Because by 1941 42, as you know, the war had been going for 2 years. And so he used to go down the list, and that we'd be, excuse me, we'd be there for maybe only 15 minutes. But that was it.
But you didn't have any Japanese in Burnaby.
No, I was wondering
No,
if
we didn't
that.
have any like that, any Japanese like you did. In fact, I don't think we had any Asian folks at all.
So the fear that there might be a Japanese invasion, not as pronounced
Well,
perhaps?
maybe we're a bit naive, but I well remember blackouts and
ARP.
and the ARP, the Air Raid Patrol,
AA.
Air Raid Patrol.
That's it.
And my father was a warden because we had the old orchard, and I was one of his helpers, and I got a hard hat,
And
and I also got a gas mask, all my own, and some of those kind of things. And we had a stirrup pump, yes, and all those things. So, you know, for a 12 or 13-year-old, as I say, maybe we're a bit naive. We, of course, we didn't have a car anyway. We'd ride on the streetcar naturally in the interurban and all that. But I don't know. We didn't seem to be. Maybe my parents shielded it from us. But of course, you know, the radio didn't. One thing I do remember: the radios used to go off the air periodically. If there was any problem, because of course, if there were any enemy planes, they could just follow the signal right into Vancouver. And so, you know, the stations, there were only three major stations in Vancouver at the time, and they used to go off the air periodically. But that, no, it wasn't, as I say, maybe we were naive. I remember my uncle's wife in Saskatchewan writing a letter to my parents, saying, "You better, my brother and I, you better send the boys back to Vanguard, because you know Pearl Harbor and so on." And when you look at it, it was a touchy time. But maybe we were either shielded or naive or something. And life went on, and the school went on. One of the things we used to bring, you know, for our metal work, there was no metal around, but we always used to bring tin cans. And so we'd bring tin cans to school, whatever cans you might have had, naturally washed and all that, and that was the metal that you had to work with to do your
So lots of
projects.
tinsmithing
Oh,
projects.
yes. Yeah.
Now, one of the projects you were involved in was this movie, Investment in Life.
In youth.
In youth. Investment
Yeah.
in Youth.
Yeah.
So tell me about that. Where did it come from? Why did it
Yeah. Well,
happen?
that was probably, I guess, one of the highlights that I found. I can remember it as if it were yesterday. In October of 1945, I was in the chemistry class, grade 12, and Mr. McDonald came along to me, and he had Ken West with him, who I didn't know at the time, but he was the main thrust and the producer of the film, who was about to be. And he said, "We're going to produce a film." No name at that point. "We're going to produce a film. Would you like to come and help?" And I think it took me about 2 seconds to make my mind up, and I said, "Of course." And so we started, and Ken West was the producer. Roth Gordon, who was a teacher in Vancouver, was the sound man, particularly mainly. Mr. McDonald was the one who wrote the script because of sound and color. The overall supervision was, of course, C.G. Brown, and he just had general oversight. I've been asked why was the film made, and I can't really give you a straight answer, But knowing a little bit about the history of some of the Burnaby schools, Burnaby, you know, was bankrupt in the 30s, and Mr. Bolton was the commissioner, who many of us, for some reason, poor fellow, we just didn't seem to take to him, but that's a side thing. There were no schools built, and they had no money, except they did have money for Burnaby South, and that was the only one. Burnaby North, I think, had a building later on, but it was opened in 1940. I think the thought was that probably it was made for two reasons. One, to show what was going on in the schools, and that, I would say, is an accurate film of what went on in the schools at that time.
The film, I mean, sure shows happy people all participating and cooperating.
Oh, yeah.
As well. Is
yeah.
that the atmosphere
oh, yeah.
at the school?
I always felt it.
No parent signatures needed.
Yeah, no, no. You know, people, I think generally people were quite happy. It was a strange thing. Of course, the war had just got over, and yet there's rationing going on because when we were producing the film, we're using 60mm Kodachrome, and it was extremely hard to come by. And I can well remember, I would have a letter from C.G. Brown, Mr. Brown, to Eastman Kodak, which had their office down on Granville Street, that they're producing this film. It'll be most appropriate and much obliged in all these nice words. If you could make 200 or 300 feet of film, because we got them in spools of 100 feet. Mm-hmm. And I used to take this down and get the film. And that was a bit of a stroke that people were quite amazed that we did get the film that time. The other reason was to, I think, also show parents and others that they had to do something about the schools, mm-hmm. because many of the schools were in pretty bad shape. Mm-hmm. I will say in later time, in 1946 or 7, I remember doing a lot of shots. I had what they called a speed graphic camera, which is the press kind of camera, 4x5 sheet film. And I did a lot of pictures for the Burnaby schools at that time for Mr. Brown. And he took those to Victoria to try and get additional funding. And I can remember Dr. Ferry, who was the deputy minister at the time, who I got to know later because I was in the Department of Education, saying to Mr. Brown, "Why did you have to show me that picture? And here is a picture of a toilet, which was overflowing and filthy and broken and all of that. Well, sir, I just wanted to show you exactly what things were like."
So the film was showing what you could aspire to be, not necessarily the conditions that currently existed.
Yeah, yeah. And so that went on. The film was done. We shot at nights and on weekends. We didn't shoot Monday to Friday because Ken West was a gold assayer by profession, working for the federal government. And he was what you'd really call quite an advanced amateur. Mm-hmm. He had very good equipment, Bolex camera, which was top of the line at that time. And he had the lights and so on, and he also had a sound system, he and Roth Gordon. And so we did that. Mm-hmm. We shot on Saturdays quite often as well. Went along from October, roughly, to about March. And the editing was all done and so on, and we had the official showing in Burnaby North at the time with Dr. Ferry in attendance and several other dignitaries of the time, and that was the first showing.
Yeah, I mean, it's technically really well done, and of course people can watch it on YouTube now.
Yeah, well, actually it won a prize in 1946 as the best, they called it the best amateur film produced in North America.
Very good.
Yeah, so it was well done.